to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. The CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs.
Good evening and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 125 for December 6, 2005. I'm Strom Carlson, and our special guest co-host this evening is Lance James from Secure Science Corporation. Say hi, Lance.
Hi.
Black Ratchet is not here tonight. He's busy filling out paperwork for something or other, and he can't make it. So damn the paperwork, and he'll be back next week. But anyway, Lance, I should introduce him before we get into the show. Lance, well, why don't you introduce yourself? You're the author of something recent.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Lance. It's actually an acronym. Just kidding. I'm the author of Phishing Exposed. That's with a PH. Which is basically a forensic manual for dealing with phishing. And it also has a lot of prediction-based events that will happen at some point. And already, since the release, there's been at least two events that have happened that are in the book. So my background is I've been in the information security field for probably 10 years, and that means I was 17 at the time, which means, you know, you can have your own inference there. But I've been kind of a hacker-type person for quite a bit, and I just, do a lot of research on protocols, cryptography, reverse engineering, and then recently in 2003 I got into tracking phishers.
Cool. Our show is live tonight, so if you have questions for myself or Lance tonight, you can call in. If you're calling from the United States, call toll-free 800-732-0442, again, 800-732-0442, or if you're calling from outside the U.S., country code 1-213-415-1047. Again, 1-213-415-1047. Dr. Zygmunt will answer your call and send you on over to us. So let's get into some housekeeping. Obviously, you know about Grass Just Night. And the map of our listeners that we set out last week, that's at frapper.com, frapper.com/binary revolution radio listeners. We have 80 listeners so far on there, which is a pretty sizable number. And if you're listening and you haven't posted yet, go to that website, frapper.com/binary revolution radio listeners, and post where you are. Put your pin on the map so we can see where everyone is. Time for some email. Our first email tonight is from Delete, and he says, "Hey dudes, the turducken is actually a Cajun food. I live in Louisiana, and I can say that these people stuff crap where it shouldn't go all the time and then eat it. The weird thing is that a lot of it is good. Time for some antacid." So, Lance, you're a vegetarian, right?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so no experience eating a turducken, and neither have I. And Yeah, lots of crazy, weird food. I thought it was some modern thing, but I guess it makes sense that it might be occasion food. And personally, Delete, I'd stay away from using the phrase stuff crap where it shouldn't go when trying to advertise occasion food. Just a thought.
Or any kind of good food.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you get this idea that it's just full of crap.
Yeah.
And then our next email is from, who asked us? It's from Linux Nightmare. sent you this email, and he said, do you guys know if you could send me the MP3 of the closing music from episode 124? That song was the shit. That song is called Rocked by Rape. It's by the Evolution Control Committee. And thankfully, like every single song that you will hear on BinRev Radio, it's free, totally free. And you can get that at http://evolution-control.com/sounds.html. G.I. Joe writes, hello, while you're talking to ICANN about getting .int opened up, could you put in a word for .su as well? Thanks. You know what SU is, right, Lance?
Yeah, it's Soviet Union.
Yeah,
actually,
of course.
Their entire zone transfer is open. If you do a DNS dig zone transfer, you can actually pull all of .su's domains.
That's funny. Can you still sign up for .su? Or,
I don't know if you can sign up for them. I haven't really looked into signing up for them. But the best thing to do is maybe go to www.su and see if that works. Hold on, let me give it a shot. So let me just try this. Sometimes, a lot of times, you'll find out. Welcome to su.com. Vacation packages, hotels. Doesn't look like I can do it.
Scenic Novosibirsk.
Whois.su. Let's try that. No, doesn't look like it's freely available to do it.
Yeah.
If there is, there's probably something you have to go.
Yeah, it might be being phased out just because the Soviet Union has
been
15 years now.
Yeah, but it is funny because I see them being used. There was one, Nevesta, N-E-V-E-S-T-A dot S-P-B dot S-U, I think what it was. So S-P, so people are adding like subdomains to them because they own them still. Or S-B-P, one of these two.
Hmm.
I'm trying to know. One of those two. But basically, I'm seeing a lot of, you know, dot S-U sites, but they're always, you know, subdomains because I think that the old ISP holders are just giving them subdomains. Anyway.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, our next email is from NUI. He says, hello, I've been assigned by my group members to gather data as to how much bandwidth is used in internet radio streams. I'm kind of tired, so please excuse any sloppiness. I have a group presentation at school, and the assignment is, someone donated $250,000. Yeah, $250,000, didn't put a comma in there, to the college, and we are to do something with the money to benefit the school and community. We picked to do an internet radio station, and immediately I thought Rant Radio and BinRev. I've done some research, and I've run into a problem, so I decided to ask you about how much bandwidth per day slash month with, I'll start with 100 listeners max at 2 bit rates, 24 and 96, or 128 preferably, 2 channels. I found this example, but I don't understand it entirely. He has 96 kilohertz times 24 bit times 2 channels stereo equals, divided by 1 equals, divide anything by 1, equals 4,608 kilobits a second. 4,608 kbps divided by 8 is times 60 seconds equals 34,560 kilobytes per minute of audio, 34.5 megabytes. And he says,
yeah.
I don't understand if that is per listener or what, then wouldn't you go through 50 gigs a day just for one listener? Hold on. Is the above example probably before compression? Anyway, if you could help me in any way, it would be much appreciated. Thanks, Eric. By the way, you guys rock.
Yeah, let me look at that math right there.
Yeah. So while you're looking at that, I'll just say, you know, pretty much the figure is per listener, but bear in mind that stereo at 96 kilohertz is totally insane for bandwidth. What we do for BinRev Radio is we sample a 22,000 samples per second, mono, 24 kilobits a second. And the bit rate is really the defining factor, because no matter what your sample rate is, it's the bit rate that you have to worry about in the stream side of things. And when compressed, we stream MP3, and the podcast ends up being roughly the same size as the live show. So 90 minutes of audio is typically about 15 to 17 megabytes. So whenever we have a listener listening for 90 minutes, it's 15 to 17 megabytes for that listener over 90 minutes. So that's about 240 megabytes per day per listener, assuming that the listeners are all sitting there listening constantly 24/7. The BinRev Radio itself typically has, let's see how many people are listening to it right now. Let me go to the website here. We've only got 15 listeners, but typically we have between 20 and 30 listeners listening to BinRev Radio.
And because I came on the show.
Beg your pardon?
It's because I came on the show.
Everyone hates you, Lance. Everyone hates you. But yeah, no, typically we do have between between 20 and 30 listeners. And although I've looked at the stream schedule, and it tends to be, you know, most of the, during the day it's about two people listening, sadly. So I really don't, if you guess like 240 megabytes a day per listener, someone listening, imagine at least one person listening constantly, you could do the math there. But it depends also on what you want to stream. If you're going to stream, you know, just talk, then you can get away with doing something like 24 kilobits a second, 22,000 hertz.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. If it's a radio show and you're not doing too much music, you know, and it's not based around music, it's more of a talk show, then you can definitely have multiple, if anything, you could offer multiple bit rates and multiple kilohertz, you know, streaming rates. That's what I was thinking. Because it could get heavy duty. I mean, I think this algorithm is proper. I think he's technically accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you're already saying that, what did you say earlier? You said your show is, I mean, when you pop it into an MP3, how big is it?
It's about 15 to 17 megabytes.
Right. And we know that they're going to stream that at a little bit less. Cause are you? How are you encoding your MP3?
It's 22,000 hertz, 24 kbps, mono. Right.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to save on, you know, yeah. And that's usually standard, I think, radio show, talk show type anyways. You're not going to need, you know, I mean, some people probably do stereo, but, you know, most people listening onto it are not going to be concerned with all the high fidelity. If it was a radio station, that would be a different story. And that's obviously the people who are running radio stations with music or Yahoo Music and people who have gigabit backends and stuff. So, but I think his algorithm is about right. But he should just lower it down to 22 kilohertz, or he could even try 64 and see how that works. You know, something like that, or 48. I'm sorry, 48 times 24, and then see if that works out and has a better, you know. So depending on their pipe is really how they're going to judge it, and depending on the content as well, I would think. Unless, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the one running the show. So.
Yeah. No, I'm not the one running the server.
Oh no. I meant like you're talking though. So yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just the pseudo guest host.
Hey, your input is always
and everybody hates me. There's five less viewers today.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking. It's like we had 17 a second ago. Now it's 16. So.
Yeah. Just because I said something stupid. See.
Yes. We want you all to die now, and stop listening.
Yes. Don't listen anymore. Oh, shoot. We just got 20 users.
It's that whole reverse psychology thing.
Yeah,
don't think about pink elephants. They think about pink elephant.
Here's a topic. T-Mobile, Paris Hilton attack, that hack that happened a few months ago, or maybe 6 months ago, whatever.
Yeah.
Turns out it sold sidekicks. Everybody was like, oh, my gosh, she's got a sidekick. Oh, we should get one. It was better than her endorsement on television.
That's hilarious.
So it actually upped sales. So
wow.
Keep hacking T-Mobile. You'll up their sales.
Funny.
So.
That is funny. But yeah, again, I'm not an expert on streaming, so someone who actually lives and breathes this stuff can probably help you better than we can. But
yeah, but the algorithm does look accurate. I would just if you're doing the talk show, lower it down to 22 kilohertz. You don't need a 24-bit and two channels. You can go into mono mode, so that'll exponentially drop you down a bit.
Yeah, in fact, the only reason we could actually stream it at far less than what we stream it at now, we could probably stream it at like maybe 16 kilobits a second and 8,000 samples a second. Since we are talking on the phone, but because the show does incorporate music, then we have to stream at the higher bandwidth. And if you're thinking of streaming all music all the time, better look into high-volume optical carrier for your connection.
Yeah, call Akamai.
Exactly, Akamai or AT&T or somebody.
Yep.
All right. So
content management companies.
Exactly. So personal stories. I guess I'll start off. Well, actually, no. What have you been doing recently, Lance? What have you been doing in the hacking world?
In the hacking world? Oh, now you got to think about stuff that I'm allowed to talk about. Hold on. Well, recently, I guess I can kind of tell it, probably in this channel, since you only have, like, you know, 80 top viewers or whatever right now, so our listeners. Ultimate IRCD is cracked. Yesterday, I cracked another encryption that a phisher was using to hide their blind drop. I've done some. Oh, some neat stuff. Okay, well, this is like a long story, but it's okay. I'll try to get it short. I've been watching over 53 fishing groups, but there's a certain fishing group that I like to watch because they're fun and very aggressive and very Russian. So, and they're very, very technical, and so I actually have kind of a deep understanding of respect for them, where even though I want to see them go down. So this group is, you know, very aggressive, and they send out malware. You know, anybody doesn't know malware. It's malicious software. It's like a virus that steals your key logs, you know, any kind of information you send on your computer. But basically, their techniques are really neat. But I've gotten to the point of, you know, identified their attack pattern, and I know when they're going to hit. And I know so well that I actually am, like, 2 days ahead of them. So the last time they set up, like, some malware, actually before the last time, so it was one time before that, basically what I did was predict where it was going to, you know, be tested at. So I found their test sites twice and basically analyzed the malware, and I, you know, basically reverse engineered it and found where they actually send all the data to, and I got those shut down before they ever, you know, sent them out. So when they tried to send it out, they got confused and thought the malware was broken and probably complained to the author of the malware. So it actually delayed them about 4 weeks. Recently they sent out another one, and I'm just basically, my hack on this one was basically I'm just stealing the data back every single hour in real time and returning it to the banks. So they're basically dead out on arrival. So my whole thing is fishing the fishers.
Awesome.
That's my hack of the week.
Totally awesome. Yeah, I haven't done any major hacking this week. There's some interesting telephone stuff, which I've been talking with Lucky 225 and Natus, and they discovered something interesting, which will be published in Binary Revolution magazine, so I'm not supposed to talk about it yet.
Although I wrote a thing on it like 6 months ago as Flashdot, but this one's slightly different, so give Lucky his props. He's got something very cool going.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see it. So.
Yeah.
But a highlight is everybody go ahead right now and buy T-Mobile, so when it's published, they're already in good standing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
I'm sure I can hint it. I don't think Lucky will kill me.
Yeah, but this past weekend I went down to San Diego and went to the book release party for a book called Fishing Exposed by someone. Who was it by? Oh yeah, you.
That guy. Yeah,
that
the guy in the corner that everybody hates.
Yeah. Good food, good booze.
Yeah.
Good people. And.
Yep.
Fish Center.
It was a lot of good turnout.
It was a great party.
Turnout. Yeah, my mother-in-law actually is the one who set that all up. You know, I preferred a Porsche, but they gave me a party instead. No, just kidding. So it turned out nice. I was glad to see you there, actually. It was kind of, I guess you got a last-minute invite.
Yeah, I got invited on the night before. What happened?
Josh
messaged me while I was at LA 2600 on Friday night at like 10 p.m. and said, drop what you're doing and come on down here. There's a book release party. I'm like,
yeah.
Sweet. So I ran back here, grabbed my suit, and came, like drove down there late at night, staving off narcolepsy.
Yeah, no. Oh, you know what? It's funny that you say narcolepsy but something to do with sleep. That night, though, I had a Murphy's Law, but here's the funniest thing is, like, all of my developers showed up for the party, like, at my company, and they came from all over the, you know, Seattle, Canada, New York, and stuff, and Riverside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I hadn't seen one of the guys from Seattle, Tony, for 8 years, and we were, like, kind of like, you know, we used to be hackers in the day, and it was crazy. And what happened is, like, when I used to hang out with him, it was just the same. We'd always be pretty much living off sleep debt because we were such, you know, hacker types. We'd stay up late hours and then just crash, you know. And it was funny because when he came, just Murphy's Law just hit. And, I got them a hotel. They all stayed at the same hotel and stuff. And basically what happened was I went back and said, okay, I got to get home, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I go to the parking lot, and one, I, you know, didn't have my Visa card. My wife had my wallet, and I'm like, oh, great, you know. And so Tom was nice enough to loan me his Visa card. I head back there, and my car's lights were on all night. My car's battery was dead. And pretty much even though I got someone to do, the jumper cables, you know, it didn't charge. It was totally dead. One of those things where it was just one of those nights, so I was screwed because I had to buy a battery. So I went back to the hotel with them, and we stayed up and got 2 hours of sleep and, you know, went to breakfast, had to drop off one of the guys at the airport and tried to install a battery. We bought a bunch of, I don't know if anybody knows the Balls drink, B-A-W-L-S. of course, a ton of sleep deprivation jokes on that drink. But, you know, it's funny because it just happened to be that, you know, that party was, like, completely never ended, and it was on accident the whole time. So, so anyways, it was just funny.
That's hilarious.
But, yeah, so that was an interesting night for me because it was more than I was ready for. But it was a fun party. Thanks for coming, Strom. I really appreciated seeing you there.
Oh, hey, thanks
and,
for inviting
had
me.
Had I had your email address earlier, you would have been invited a lot earlier.
Oh, cool. Well, now you've got it.
So, yes, I do now. So it's actually pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty damn easy. The cool thing.
Right, I think I'll go announce it for all the spammers listening. Just kidding.
Yeah. Well, it's on my website, so if you want to spam me, just go to stromcarlson.com and spam me from there. No, the cool thing about the party was that the whole thing was fish themed.
Oh, yeah. And you got your own beta fish from.
Yeah. I got one of the centerpieces on the tables were betas and little fish bowls.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got one, and now he's sitting on my desk. And
excellent.
He is the official fish of Fishing Exposed, I think.
Yeah, he's official. I mean, he's. It was so funny because, like I was saying earlier, my mother-in-law came up with the whole idea of that and everything. And my mom actually came up with, and she wasn't there, but she came up with the bookmark idea. And it's funny. Did you get a bookmark?
You know, I grabbed a bookmark, and I can't find it in my book, so I think it must have dropped out of Josh's
book. Anybody who ever writes a book and you ever do a promotional party about your book or, you know, just a release party, take your book and put, like, all the stuff on a bookmark because it's a great gift, you know, like, for when you get someone's book, you know. So, and it's just great promotional tool. So, you know, all those hackers out there just, you know, writing a book or working on a book, you know, throw the idea to your publisher as well if they ever, you know, put together something or things like that or hand out bookmarks because they're a great marketing tool and you don't have to, it's not like they're huge, so you don't have to carry them around everywhere and you just kind of have them in your books, you know. So.
Yeah, totally.
So, but it was neat because my mom works at a bookstore, so she's used to book signings. So she, like, came up with, you know, said, here's something that's popular. So, anyways, it is a neat party. I enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I think most people did. So.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, I got my own autographed by the author copy of Fishing Exposed.
Yeah, what did I say about you, Ken? That,
you wrote, "Hi, Strom, keep the freak in you, Lance."
So. Yeah, I thought that was neat.
That was pretty cute.
So, yeah. I signed my own copy for me, and I said, just kidding. No.
To myself, without
really awesome guy. Everybody else hates you, but as long as you like yourself, you're okay.
To myself with admiration, love and kisses, Lance.
Exactly. So I wrote this book. It's 50 pages shorter than I wanted, but that's the publisher's fault.
Well, not including the index, the book is, at the end of chapter 7, 380 pages.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like 450, really. So they're lying to you when it says it on Amazon. But buy it anyways, it's still worth it.
So anyway, I guess let's go into the meat of our show. And by the way, for those of you listening to us live, we are live tonight. And if you have questions for myself or Lance, you can call us. I'll announce the numbers again. From the United States, call toll-free 800-732-0442. Again, 800-732-0442. Or
if
you're calling
I'm happy to call myself. Sorry.
I'm sorry?
I said if you don't call, I'll call myself.
Right. And if you're calling from outside the U.S., dial country code 1-213-415-1047. Again, country code 1-213-415-1047.
Yes, international callers must pay.
Yes. Sadly, there's no way we tried to get the toll-free number to at least work from Canada, but it doesn't seem to work that way.
Well, you could do the whole free world dial-up thing where you can hook up all the different international
numbers. We could, but I mean, it's just more reliable to do it over a real phone number.
Yeah, I know.
And since the majority of our listeners look based on the map, are in the U.S., the 800 number works just fine for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, too, that we'd have to provide translators for all the international callers. I mean, you can imagine the headaches we would get anyway. So it's better that they pay, because they pay to speak
exactly.
English to
and
us.
Poor Zygmunt, you know, Zygmunt would just die under the whole, under the stress of trying to translate everything.
Yeah, I know, it'd be fun.
Reminds me of when I worked at a large ticketing company that was doing the Olympics, the 2004 Olympics, and I had to call Athens, Greece, every time something went wrong, and the international staffing thing, you know, it's like they have people from every country staffing the call center, so you get all these people who speak English badly, but a different variety of bad English every time,
mm-hmm.
And that was just a trip.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I wouldn't want to. I you know what it's worse for me is I get these Texans,
mm-hmm.
like, and that's bad enough for me. I mean, Texans have their own little language, I guess. You know, hello.
Yeah. Well, no, I was watching.
I'm looking for a secure. It's almost like I can't even do it. It's so bad.
Well, I was watching this this little video from the SBC AT&T merger, and there was some guy talking, and it turns out it's Ed Whitaker, who's the chairman of the company. And I'm like, that's him? Because his voice, it starts off, from the moment human speech first traveled across a wire in 1876. I'm like, my God, what the hell of a draw. No wonder he doesn't do any of the spokesperson stuff for the company.
You know what I get, though?
What?
It's funny. I still get these today. Last August or maybe September of last year, I sent out an advisory about callwave.com, which is what is it? Like, if you have a modem still, it like tells you someone's trying to call you in, right? And so I did this exploit where basically you could terminate any caller, you know, or not terminate any caller, terminate any subscriber to their system.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually shut their, you know, accounts off and just, if you knew you called up a callwave person, you could actually do some real evil. But the whole point is that I put an advisory, and so somehow in Google, people will sort secure signs as callwave, and they're trying to call a callwave. So I get these people from, like, Kentucky, and, like, just totally southern older people, you know, and it's like, hello, is this callwave? You know, no, let me get the number for you. There's no number on their site. I know they're that type of company, ma'am. Let me get it for you. So it's just funny because it's, like, totally different. And so we'll try to translate that type of talk as well. So maybe I'm dissing everybody. I don't mean to be. I'm just joking around. So we appreciate all Americans of all sorts. You know. So.
All right. So
we're going to put a foot in our mouth and go to a new subject.
Okay. Let's see. We do. Okay. We have a call on hold, but I think we're going to get into the meat of the question. So
okay.
Let's do this. Let's start off with tell us about phishing. Introduce phishing. What is
phishing?
Okay,
let me, for all that don't know, which I would be really surprised if you don't on this thing, but there is a chance. So we'll just do that, you know, you don't know thing. And if you don't know, I'm glad that you're learning today because the people that get gypped don't know. Basically, phishing is, I'm going to use a very broad perspective of it, but it is basically social engineering in the form of email, instant messaging, mainly in email today. Where it basically tries to trick people into, you know, signing up for, you know, the bank account that really isn't, you know, the bank. So what that would mean is you would get an email that says, "Dear Citibank user, there's a problem with your account. You know, you need to fill this information out and update your account information immediately. Click here to sign in and, you know, fill out the information." And so what it is when you click on that link, it looks like it says Citibank in your email, but underneath that is what they call an href tag, which basically means where it really goes to is some other site, usually off of Citibank, unless Citibank's got a problem with their website, but usually off of Citibank, it'll be some other site somewhere in, you know, the United States at an ISP sitting somewhere that basically looks like Citibank, but it really isn't Citibank. And a lot of people who are not in the know will fall for it and log into it, and it'll go, "Thank you for, you know, updating your security settings," or it'll pass you back to the bank or things like that. And so what'll happen is, you know, little they know, they've gotten all their credentials stolen. You know, and it's funny because phishing goes back to the old school days. So it's like as more advanced we get, the attacks go back to the fundamentals. So that's kind of what phishing is in the long run. And most people will see an eBay or an Amazon or a Citibank or a PayPal email in their thing that's definitely, you know, "Well, I don't have an eBay account," or "I definitely don't have a LaSalle Bank or a South Trust Bank account," so, or some credit union out of there. If you guys have seen that, then you definitely have seen a phishing email. And so, you know, what I do from that perspective is I actually categorize those phishing emails and categorize them in groups and, you know, start like saying, "Hey, this is this phishing group, this is this phishing group," and you know, they all have different distinct patterns because they're serial behavior.
Yeah, like I noticed the introductory part of your book, there's an example where you start filtering these spam emails, these phishing emails that you've received,
mm-hmm.
and you start narrowing it down by like you narrow it down and like, so let's see, what was the example? Let me pull it up here.
Capital letter hashbusters on the subject line.
Yeah, that's right. So it's like first you narrow it down to all the spam with capital letter hashbusters on the subject line, and then you narrow it down to all the spam messages with that capital letter subject hashbuster, and then a time zone of -1700, which doesn't even exist.
Right.
And then
not
you
on
can,
Earth,
yeah, and then you can see this pattern that they all seem to come from like someone drumming their fingers on the keyboard and typing some numbers at yahoo.com.
Yep. And so basically from that drumming you could see inside to out, out to in. Also the certain type of software that we identified actually had it where you had to press the mouse to the submit key or the send mail key rather than just hitting enter. So and it was on the right side and you can see like if someone types in ASDF or something like, you know, totally like that, you can tell where their hand is on the mouse. So there's certain, you know, positions and we wrote some software a while back that does like, you know, metrics based off of like outside to in, and so it does 75% chance this person is left-handed or right, you know, those kind of things. So this is what we call keyboard profiling. And so we'll see it on IRC channels where someone will get upset too and they'll just like, you know, dish their hand off the keyboard and we'll measure the sample. And of course the bigger the sample the better chances we have. You know, but yeah, that's, you know, what we do is basically take traits. Start with the bulk mailing traits and then move into also with phishing you can start looking at the website traits. Certain kind of code, do they mirror it? Do they refer all the images or do they actually mirror all the images or do they do a mixture of both? Do they have a dot dot slash? You ever see that or you see a dot 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 slash in a phishing email when you actually go to the site? So that you can tell that they probably hacked in and they're hiding the actual site. We also group it and categorize the type of attack points, right? So if you're scanning a machine, there's like a certain group out there that'll look for all cPanel, which is the ISP in a box, you know, which is basically a, you know, cPanel basically sets it up so you don't have to think about your ISP. It's a management engine for your customers. And you just send them a login and they can start managing their accounts. And so like we'll see a lot of those vulnerabilities and we'll categorize that. So we, you know, basically we'll go, okay, this group has sent this type of email. Okay, we already know what group that is. Are they following the same traits? Oh, yes, they are. So let's put them in phishing group number 2 or phishing group number 20, which is a city image group. One you've probably seen very often is the city group type emails. And what it is, it's an entire image of the city group logo and all the wording inside an actual image. And the click is actually the image's href. Have you ever seen that before? I don't know if you even look at phishing.
Yeah, I've looked at that. I think I've seen it.
Right, and that would be phishing group number 20, what we call a city image. If you look in their headers, they'll have an FCC colon, which is a file carbon copy as well, so their bulk mailing tool has the specifics. There's all these little things, so we basically can categorize them. And we've also traced back them to being involved in spam for the last 2-plus years or this or that, because a lot of spammers went phishing, so they came from spamming to going to fish. You know, because, of course, in the end run, what's the goal here?
Yeah, the end run is to get your information.
Yeah, well, the end run is not to get your information. The end, what does information get you?
Money. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, yes, the attack point, the vector that you're looking at, the threat, is, you know, is that you got to protect your information. But spamming even was about money, and that's already a shady business. And they had hackers that they hired to, you know, basically steal mailing lists or, you know, harvest them. And so black hat techniques were always used there, too. So.
Yeah, I remember actually I worked at a company one time, and they got this amazing idea up their ass to spam people to get more customers. I said, this is a bad idea.
Right.
This is a dumb idea. Don't do it. Don't do it. But they eventually pressed ahead with it anyway, and I was kind of reluctantly ended up writing screen scrapers to go filter through web pages and grab email addresses from mailing lists and whatnot.
Actually, chapter 3, I think it's chapter 3. In there, I even show how, like, you know, like people put in those no spam things. And I do a regex command line piped into wget and basically, or something, I can't remember what I did there. I think it was, it was piping into wget, and then I did a regex command and I basically sorted it all out. And then basically what would happen is you'd have an emailing list. Like just off of using your command line tools. Now imagine all the tools out there that are, you know, heavily thought out. You know, there's a lot of harvesting tools out there. Oh yeah, here it is, wget.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Chapter 3, page 117. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, in fact,
basically, I just took the seclist.org, you know, the security lists out there that, like, you know, bug track and all that, and it even bypasses the no spam, you know, little stuff that they put in there and some of that stuff, and then basically just make a sorted mailing list and. I think we gained, like, I don't know how many. We got 174 names just on one initial pass.
Wow.
That were unique.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and they're looking for obviously between 100,000 and a million per mailing list. Now, the bigger groups use less, smaller mailing lists per shot.
Right.
They regionalize them as well.
Now, speaking of the whole money thing, we have Ionix on the line.
Who is it? Sorry?
Ionix.
Ionix.
Are you there,
yes.
Ionix?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, cool. You had a question about money, didn't you?
I did have a couple of questions. The first one was, how lucrative is phishing? I'm assuming it has to be at least fairly lucrative. It's very.
And here's what we're going to tell you the truth about. Okay, the groups that are involved in phishing, let's talk about the really organized ones, like professionals, and like let's not talk about the ones that are disorganized in Romania and kind of, you know, make a daytime job of it or whatever. Those guys probably make 10 to 15,000 a month. Now, the lucrative, you know, that's okay. But in Russia, the organized groups, the larger groups that are filled with like 13-plus, you know, individuals, just in phishing. Now, we're talking just the scams, and this includes malware, too, and money moving and all the different phases of it. They're averaging out an individual person in that group making $300,000 a month.
Wow.
So that's an individual person. So they're making millions a month. Now, the worst part about this is that these guys are not just into phishing, though. The entire racketeering of them, they're involved in child porn. They're involved in Russian bride sales. They're involved in lead stealing, hacking, of course, for money. They're involved in, like, spam, of course, malware, malicious software. Like, for instance, I was one of the co-authors of Who Wrote So Big? And if you go on Google, and we wrote it anonymously at the time, but I'm not too worried about them now. So, but that type in Who Wrote So Big? And there's a whole paper. And we identified the author of So Big by name. And that guy made a good living until we wrote that paper. So, you know, but the spamming industry alone is a multi-million dollar industry. Okay? The selling of information, I mean, look at Napster. Why did Napster get bought up? Because their demographics, not because of their activity. They had how many users?
Yeah.
So it's the sale of information. They have actually kiosks in Russia that they sell. Here's a hard drive with all these people's information. You know?
Wow.
And so it's big money. And, I mean, look at just lead companies alone. They make, you know, average of, you know, good lead companies can make an average of a few million a month just selling leads to loan officers fairly. So what if you're doing it illegitimately, you know, and you're stealing money, plus you're selling the information back to spammers or possibly lead companies. So you have multiple venues to sell that information and resell that information and resell that information. Imagine how much information they have on you. Plus these guys do credit checks. They know how much money you have. So they know if you own a house, they know, if, you know, what you're paying on your house, and they know if you have some TD Waterhouse account somewhere and say, oh, this guy's got bigger money. Let's go after him personally and, like, do a bigger scam. You know,
that's why
it's endless for them.
Sorry? That's why I never get those emails.
Protect yourself from phishing. Get broke.
My
protection is the fact that I'm so far in debt that no.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a good protection. Honestly, you know, they're probably not going to steal a penny off of you. No, but yeah, there's a lot of money to be made, and the organized crimes have it on tap. And you know, even the smaller players, they're making about Some of them are claiming about $100,000 a month, you know. So, I mean, they're claiming, though. This is out of their mouth. So they could be, you know, boosting their numbers just to look cool. But I know that they're at least making...
Or they could be downplaying them so that...
Yeah, the money laundering, though, per shipment, though, is average about $4,000. So if you're doing the money laundering where you're, like, selling stolen goods, the per shipment space of that is about $4,000, and that's in a week, usually. The guy will do it within a week. Maybe if they're real aggressive, they'll do it 3 times in a week. So if you did 4 times 3, that's 12 right there, right? So think of that. You're at least going to be making, if you're doing shipments of $4,000 3 times a week, $12,000. What is that? 10, 20, 30, 40. That's at least $50,000-$60,000.
So
I mean, so
they make
they
about three times
people
as much
doing
in
that
a month as I do in a year.
Sorry?
I was just saying they make about 3 times as much in a month as I do in a year.
Yeah, they're making a lot of money. They're moving money. And the more aggressive groups are going to be faster at it. Plus, if you're organized, more careful, and you don't get busted, you're going to be in business a long time. The worst part is that now we also have malware. And which actually, even when phishing started, there was malware. 2003 is technically when officially phishing started. And so malware was actually out then. Burbu was logging all these keystrokes from people, and it was quite clandestine. No one knew about it. I actually had a copy of Burbu that was 9 months old. That the antivirus vendors didn't pick up. And that was pulling in gigs and gigs and gigs and gigs of people's data. We're talking like, I mean, I have the hard drives. And so I've got at least like from 1 or 2 weeks, it was like 13 gigs. you know, off of people. And some of the data was still available, but they had scripts that they set up and would target certain banks, and, you know, basically those were the productive banks. And so I really believe it when they're making, you know, $300,000 per individual. I don't doubt it, you know. So it's a pretty big game. But don't start it, you know.
No, I wasn't.
No, I'm just being funny. So it's like, well, you're like, hey, we're in the wrong business, but
yeah.
But yeah, it's a big money game.
Wow.
So.
Well, you pretty much
supposedly, did you read that article, though? Did you read the article that's saying that cybercrime has surpassed drug crime now, the in money?
Yes, I have.
I thought that was interesting. Yeah, this.
Although I don't know what kind of drug dealers and cybercrime people are sort of submitting their tax forms. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're doing. It's interesting how they came up with their numbers. I don't really buy the numbers because they're also sliding piracy in that. And no offense, I don't really look at piracy as a severe cybercrime. I mean, my level.
Oh, they slid it in on the cybercrime. I was wondering if they were sliding it in on the drug side.
Drugs
and like watch the Matrix, you know, and
cocaine,
yeah.
Pot, and some Mariah Carey album.
Yeah,
yeah.
Man.
Well, you know, yeah. Like, oh, you said
that's Friday night.
Does that count? So,
so they were sliding that into cybercrime.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of things that I don't think that the article had enough substantial statistics to really make me feel like that's completely entirely accurate. So.
Yeah,
you know,
I distrust.
We're getting up there.
I distrust statistics to begin with, but that one, the only thing that I did have to say when I finished reading that article was, drug dealers of the world, step up, man. I mean, you guys are slacking.
Yeah, get on IM and start dealing, you know, instant messaging everybody and telling them, hey, do you want some weed? No.
Just start selling your asses off because you guys are getting beat, man.
I know.
You got a bunch of computer nerds are beating the drug dealers. Like, that's
well, you know what
that
means,
happened on the streets, they'd get shot.
We're going to see the Fishers and the drug dealers start combining forces soon, and we'll get, you know, email from your local drugstore has your weed for pickup.
Well, if we're talking about the Russians, then they probably already have.
Probably.
Well, another idea, though, is just, you know, what this is going to produce is that you made a really good point there. Maybe intertwining of drug dealing and cybercrime together. Like, hey, we could use your IT infrastructure to help us sell, you know? So I'm sure that at some point will, if not, it's already being, going to be there. So, but,
cool.
I mean, we're finding, like, a lot of American fishers are meth freaks. They're, like, totally doing it to pay off their meth habit. You know, so.
Yeah, that's why I got robbed at gunpoint once, so the guy could pay off his meth habit.
Yeah, wow, sorry to hear that.
okay, all I had in my wallet was like $2 and credit cards, which were all canceled before he
got
away.
Well, you're lucky he wasn't completely like freaked out, because like some of those guys are very unpredictable.
Very
so,
twitchy.
Like, yeah, very twitchy. I mean, I mean, one time I had a weird story where this guy came up to my car and was like, I'll kill you, man! And I'm like, I don't know who you are or what your deal is, but, you know... Like, he was on, like, some moped or something. It was a really weird movie, like, fully strung out, you know, like, oh, wow, you know.
Moped jacking.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it was weird. But, yeah, so there's
biker,
a lot
moped
of
gangs.
Different motivations for people getting involved in it. And so, mm-hmm. to the point of, you know, but, yeah, the top fishers are making some serious cash because, you know, you got to look at it this way. Russia culturally right now is, you know, they're saying that tax evasion is kind of a sport over there. So, you know, so it's a different economy, and the politics behind it is it kind of makes sense. And I don't mean to diss America, but in a way, from their perspective alone, they kind of look at it like "F you, America," because you put us in this position. You said, "Oh, democracy," and then we said, "Oh, let's go, guys." You know, and so from their perspective, it's, you know, become a corrupt country because they're stuck in breadlines and they got to make money. So that's you know, kind of probably culturally that's how they look at us right now. So. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but it's how they're looking at us right now.
So, yeah. Well, thanks, Ionix, for calling in.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And if anyone else wants to call in, again, the number toll-free, 800-732-0442 from within the U.S. and from outside the U.S., country code 1-213-415-1047. Thank you, Ionix. See you later. Okay, he's gone.
No dollar tone. You do that in your show. Have a dial tone.
Yeah, well, I just pick up my speakerphone here, and then there's our dial tone.
There we go. It's been hung up on.
Yeah. So, so freaking is lucrative.
Yeah. Fishing is definitely
It's not yeah. freaking gas fishing.
Yeah, you know what I was about to say about freaking, because I just caught you on the word. It's like it's lucrative there too. There's a lot of fishers using freaking to actually get by.
There'll be a soundbite that'll come back to haunt me.
Yeah, no, but no, it's true. I mean, if you can spoof caller ID, you can do a lot of damage to scamming people. So, I mean, obviously that's a big thing. Phone phishing, I guess, mm-hmm. which is in Chapter 6, you know. So I go into detail on, you know, all the phone problems with phishing.
So I think let's get into the evolution of phishing, which is what you really wanted to talk about.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, here's my big issue right now, and I'm going to just rant for a sec, if you don't mind, Strom.
Ahead.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure I don't ruin your radio show or anything going on.
No, I think this radio show historically has been nothing but rants. So you're on safe ground.
Well, my rant is this. Most people in the game of anti-phishing, fuck you. You don't know what you're talking about. That's my rant. So here's my problem, and I'm going to diss this out personally. It's my chance to say this. But basically, anti-phishing working group and all those types of people out there are all vendors. And all they're doing is trying to make money off people's, like, not understanding the problem. And I have a big problem with that because, you know, I technically am a vendor, but I do not sell them what I call snake oil. I do not, you know, and I don't go around selling them. I'm actually more of a good Samaritan more than anything. So they can come to us when they need stuff, and that's what usually how we do things. But the whole point is that from a true security standpoint, and BinRev is all about supporting, you know, the hackers and the freakers and the crackers out there. And the reason why is because they are the cornerstone to keeping our technology in check, you know. So from my perspective, I take the same stance when I dealt with phishing, is that these people, these vendors out there go, oh, look, we've got this cool technology called Passmark SiteKey. Let's give it to Bank of America. And what that is basically it's a two-way, two-factor authentication, also known as market speak. And what that does is shows you a picture of, like, something, and you choose these pictures and stuff. The worst part is, if anybody knows anything about two-factor authentication, you're not supposed to do it in-band, you're not supposed to set it up in-band, and you don't go releasing a press release on it and saying, hey, fishers, guess what we just installed? You know?
Dumb.
Exactly. So my point is that, yeah, then I see the next email come out. Dear fished user, we're putting in our new site key system. Please sign up now to, you know, sign up for your site key, you know. Then they sign up, and it turns out that the fishers are sending them their site keys and doing man-in-the-middle attacks on this stuff. Plus, I hate to say it, Passmark Security's product does not stop phishing. It does not even address malware, and I hate to say it, the evolution of phishing will be malware. People are sitting there saying, oh, you know, anybody notice that the phishing has gone down? Or they'll say, oh, yeah, the takedowns are really lowering those phishing numbers. Well, here's the news to you. Taking down things is a bad thing right now. You know why? Because the majority of phishing spoof sites, the malicious sites, are hosted in the United States. That is to our advantage right now. Why? Because ISPs are your friends. And there's this nice little law called Title 18 of USC 1030 that allows you, with the terms of service, to defend yourself and your network. And so the ISPs can take some action that don't require the FBI or, you know, having to wait on the bureaucracy of the government to actually take some action. So what's happening is people are going, oh, I want to take this down and, like, you know, get these sites down in 15 minutes or 30 minutes. One, fishers are moving anyway, so they're not really going to take your problem as a threat. Two, guess what I saw today? A Roadrunner account that actually was compromised and using their site. How do you take down a modem user? Do you cut off their internet? How do you get a hold of Time Warner to do it? You know? Or what happens when it's five different modem users from different things and they basically start distributing the actual information? Or they just move to Korea or China and countries that don't want to talk to you or even help you. Right? Whereas if you didn't take down and you actually said, hey, why don't we monitor this and, like, build something where we can kind of, like, sever them off into this corner and we can get more intelligence on them, you know, and understand what they're doing and do the data recovery and find out what they're stealing. Because if you can find out what they're stealing, you just give it to the bank that they stole it from, and the bank can handle actually doing the actual mitigation of risk. So instead of sitting there going takedowns, because they're still going to get those numbers and everybody's still black-boxed in what they stole, you know, put monitoring systems in place or snort alert files that say, hey, this looks like a phishing site, let's keep an eye on it. Instead of sitting there going, oh, gosh, we don't want the users to log in. Education is one step in the defense in depth, you know, model here. And education, the people that are getting phished are grandma and grandpa. They're never going to hear about it. And guess what they're running? Windows 98. So they don't have Service Pack 2. They don't have any information connecting to them. And the malware is going to hurt them more. You know, so my rant on this is that, you know, vendors, need to be careful what they're buying, because there's keyboards out there, like virtual keyboard is another thing that they've sold out to these companies. Citibank, I gave a Strom, do you have the link?
Yeah, it's let me actually tiny URL it here.
Okay.
So go ahead about virtual keyboard.
Yeah, so basically Citibank in India has engaged in the virtual keyboard. What that is basically everybody is talking on the news about key logging, which means it's logging your keystrokes. Now, the problem is that if any vendor actually took the time to analyze all the malware that actually was involved by phishers, and this malware would be Burbu, MicGlider, Snapper, Hackstore, PWS Banker, you know, things that are actually like designed to steal your data off your bank. They don't use keyboard logging. They don't actually log the buffers in your keyboard because it's unscalable. Imagine having to try to keep track of that. Have you ever put a key logging hardware device on something and looking through a notepad and saying, wow, what a mess?
I can certainly imagine. That tiny URL,
okay,
by the way, is tinyurl.com/BMMUW.
Okay, and so that's the Citibank's like virtual keyboard. If anybody actually uses like tamper data or live HTTP headers, go ahead and like fake log into that. Like don't really log into it and just like set up something fake and hit submit. And you'll see the actual HTTP headers that get sent. It's a post content that gets sent to the server. Well, when you get hit with malware, it doesn't actually do keyboard logging. It actually does what's called form grabbing. It logs your posts and your get sent, you know, submissions. So when you send submit, it doesn't matter if you have a virtual keyboard because it's not looking at the keyboard. It's looking at your browser. And it's actually logging in via a browser helper object. And so it'll hook into your browser and basically you can see the malware send your data off, actually, if you had like headers on your IE, if you were infected. So like it actually takes that, and so it bypasses any of the, you know, keyboard, you know, strokes or anything like that. It has nothing to do with it because it's more scalable just to say, hey, look, here's the URL. It's httpbankofamerica.com or citibank.com/, here's the information, and then here's the content in their post. And their content will show their password and their login, you know, plus their cookies sometimes, depending on what they're gathering. But the whole point is the virtual keyboards do not work. So don't let some vendor, like, you know, sell you this because it's crap. It's crap software. So my biggest issue there is that. Another rant is that vendors need to start, you know, the banks, the institutions need to start taking more responsibility. Image versus reality.
Mm-hmm.
The banks don't
yeah.
really care about you, I'm sorry to tell you. Did you have something to say, Strom? I thought.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, well, if this doesn't work, what does work? But I'm sure you're going to get into that in a short
oh,
while.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't want to pump my technology, but I do want to pump, like, some common sense into people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we did build some technology that actually, you know, can see someone mirroring your site. We can see when they actually, like, start testing your site. So we see the phisher way in advance, and it sits on the bank. But all we did was actually study how phishing works. All I'm saying to the sellers of the world that sell people anti-phishing, stop doing it for money and do it for actually solving the problem, because really no one's going to solve the problem for tomorrow. They're going to just solve it for this second, you know. And they go, oh, look, two-factor authentication. By the time they install that, a bank takes about a year and a half to get anything installed, okay. By the time they install that, we're moved on, and the phishers have too, you know. So it's like you have to be a little bit more realistic. What's going to work in the long run? Find the weaknesses in how phishing works,
mm-hmm.
okay. Look at the methodology that they use and say, hey, what's obvious in all of these things, and then start building that off of those weaknesses so that you force them into a corner of making it more difficult to evolve, because the name of the game is numbers when it comes to phishing. There is no absolute security. There's no silver bullet. So what's going to happen is basically you've got to play the numbers game, just like in spam. So what you do is make phishing difficult. If you really make it difficult, you throw away all the kiddies that are doing it and picking it up just in Romania, you know. And then what happens then is you basically, you know, have a few people that you can focus on and then go after and go for apprehension. Right now everybody's like, oh, gosh, I'm overwhelmed with all this phishing. Well, that's because you guys are making it easy for them, you know. So you got to know how to actually, like, you know, anybody who wants to, like, interested in learning more, just, you know, email me offline, you know, info@securescience.net, and, you know, I can go into detail about, you know, more common sense, especially if you're an ISP listening. You know, we've got a free service, you know, counter-phishing your ISP, you know, so that you can basically, you know, have some things stepped in so that you can see if a phisher's about to set up shop and things like that. So, you know, but I'm not here to promote our stuff. I mean, most of the stuff we do for ISPs is free anyways. So, but, you know, the image versus reality problem I'm having is that basically what's happening is these banks and these institutions are more concerned with their image of what people will think because they don't want to lose their customers rather than the reality that their customers are still getting owned, but they don't see it. You see, the fishers, you know, the numbers are looking like they go down because the fishers are evolving to more clandestine techniques. So what's happening is malware and things like that, you know, the Windows 98 users have no clue that they've been infected for ages and that they're sending off data. And I mean, like, I'm literally looking at a file right now that I'm grabbing, and I'm actually, you know, like I told you about that hack earlier and the personal hacks, and I'm, you know, getting this data live, and the average per day is about 10 megabytes of stolen data, you know. So these people are getting their data stolen, like, at hordes of 10 megs at a time, you know. And so, and you know, it's still working, and the numbers are still keeping up, and these malwares last, like, 2 to 4 weeks with undetectable. You know, and so from our perspective, you know, just because you don't see phishing hitting your site doesn't mean that you're not getting owned. And that also, you got to remember, all the stuff they stole in 2004, you don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do. I actually have a site with 400 gigs of stolen data on it. So it's free. So any bank that's out there possibly listening, you know, come and, again, send us info at Secure Science. And say, hey, you know, I want to find out if our customer's data has been stolen. We'll send you a PGP file and set you up to go so that you can help, you know, your customers mitigate the risk. In 3 months' time, we've invested in some stuff that's neat. What we're going to do is an identity theft system. Basically, all the data that we have, we're going to start giving it to the customer. Now, we're going to give them the sensitive data. We're going to give them the numbers to call to the banks that they've been compromised from. So if they've been compromised, like Wells Fargo, it'll say Wells Fargo and their 1-800 number for their hotline. What this will do is push the banks into, you know, it'll basically provide pressure on the banks from the customers, because now the secret's out. You know, the banks aren't doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so basically, you know, so that's where I'm coming from there. And so instead of taking this image of we're not getting phished, start applying and learning about malware. Learn how to analyze malware. You know, we're doing training sessions, if I can promote myself a little bit. We do training sessions on actually malware analysis and how to look at this stuff and actually how to do shortcut tools. Also, I'll be speaking at ShmooCon. There's a free talk for you, you know, other than registration. Go there, and I'm showing a lot of shortcuts to actually how to look at phishing malware and recover the data.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Although an attack that occurs to me, you know, based on what you just said, is, you know, send an email. We believe your data has been compromised. Please call the bank at 800 number, and they call it, and it sounds like Wells Fargo, but in reality, it's just something you've set up on an asterisk box.
Right. Now, the whole thing about that is what we are going to do is we have daylight fraud prevention in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not at the site, we're going to, you know, provide, you know, we're going to provide as much education. Plus, I mean, the problem with this is that that's one of the reasons why we didn't put the information online to these people, because, I mean, it's a Fisher's gold mine, you know. But what we're going to do is out of band SMS messaging, and of course there's SMS spoofing out there, but we're going to basically have it more of an extendable system so that they don't necessarily are running into the email, because we're going to say, we will not email you this information. We will not email you this at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that basically they are going to, you know, we're going to have to provide some information to these people. But the people going to this site are already going to be interested in finding out if their identity is stolen. So they're going to be eager to learn how to take certain precautions. So there's going to be a lot of education on the site. So if they're already there, then obviously thank God you're there, because then you're looking at education, learning how to be more careful with your data, and you're going to find out if you've gotten any stuff stolen. Another thing that we're doing, though, with that program is eventually we're going to work with, like, other, you know, institutions and plug an API in there, so if a user logs in, it lets the institution know right away that we've seen some data in our intelligence, you know, get compromised with their stuff, so that the bank can be responsible and say, oh, in real time, we let you know, and we basically will work with you, and then we can have an ActiveX thing that will rid the malware off your system. So from the bank, though, and, I mean, there's phishing is still social engineering. There are so many ways to get someone to fool them. But it's an old-school scam. You could do it via fax. You could do it via home mail. I mean, that's unfortunate about that part. But the at least you'll have some more technical knowledge of how to be online safer in that sense. I mean, I don't want to discourage anybody from using online banking. But, you know, a lot of it is just having common sense. If you feel any inkling that anything is suspicious, then call your bank, that the number you have on the back of your credit card, you know. So, and so that's one of the things I would promote is, like, you know, just take the common sense precautions and trust your instincts. If you don't trust it, don't follow through, don't click on that link. So, but speaking of image versus reality, also another problem we have with those image people, T.D. Waterhouse doesn't get fished yet, I guess. Or, I mean, they do. I have, you know, but with malware, not actually, like, you know, a phishing email. You know, there's a few little TD companies that have been, like their bank and everything. But they're an investor house and such like that. And so I put up a link, which you can probably put a tiny URL to as well.
Yeah, I just tiny URL'd it. It's tinyurl.com/ He has an Apple, L as in lion, V, V as in Volkswagen, Volkswagen, O. ALVVO, or if you want to type in the full thing, it's ip.securescience.net/exploits/td.html.
Yeah, as in TD Waterhouse.
Yes.
And what that does is you click on that link and it shows you that we're actually using the real www.tdwaterhouse.com site.
That's 404ing.
Is it?
Yes.
Hold on. TD Waterhouse did? Okay, hold on one sec.
Well, it says not found. URL exploits tda.html is not found on the server.
That's weird because I just went there. Oh, I'm sorry. I sent you the wrong link, my bud.
Okay.
Tdwaterhouse.html.
Okay.
Okay. My bad.
Well, let me tiny URL that for our listeners. And that's D as in David, 3-6, T as in Tom, the number 2.
Yeah, so it's tdwaterhouse.html after the exploits. And if you log into that, basically what will happen is it's a setup where if you type in any credentials, it's, you know, the domain actually says www.tdwaterhouse.com. That's because we're there, but we're using a cross-site. Well, we're doing HTML injection that enabled cross-site scripting, so we're actually, like, took over the entire site, so the bottom frame is secretly ours. And so if you hit login, it'll say, thanks for your passwords, they taste great. And then the next page will take you to our Secure Science site underneath of that, showing that that could have been a Fisher doing that. And I told them 6 months ago that this was occurring, and they still have not fixed it. And it's, you know, featured in my book on how to actually set up the attack.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, so let's see, it uses the top is actually TD Waterhouse.
You know,
yeah, the bottom frame.
Yeah, and we could, if you want to, I can get real technical, and we can do a JavaScript that would take over both frames using the parent frame DOM API.
I'm looking at it. I don't see anywhere that says Secure Science.
Yeah, it's pushed all the way to the end, so you'd have to highlight the entire URL.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so.
Yeah, you see how it's all the way over there?
I'm not seeing it.
Okay.
There it is, ip.securescience.net.
Yep. So, yeah, so basically on my site underneath, and then if you log in, it just throws a JavaScript pop-in. Now, you can take over the entire site, which you can do some real damage to. In my book, I actually show how to break their SSL as well. So you can actually, like, end up compromising SSL where you won't get a warning. You'll have a full block lockdown at the bottom that says, you know, webbroker.tdwaterhouse.com. The top domain says that. It's HTTPS. Everything's perfect, just as how people are taught to, you know, the basic information, they're taught to make sure your SSL cert is, you know, accurate. You can view the SSL cert, it'll say, you know, you're at verisigned, tdwaterhouse.com. But secretly underneath, it's my SSL cert embedded in there that's actually doing the encryption and decryption because I've taken over the frames.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you don't need the secret key to break SSL. News to some people, but, you know. So
yeah, and I try to log in, it says, thanks, your password takes rate, and it takes me to your page.
Yeah, it does. So, and it shows you which frame I'm in. So, but yeah, so that, you know, those are the things that I'm concerned with is, like, you know, the evolution of it is they are getting smarter. Recently when this book got published, the IRS, I don't know if some people saw it at Yahoo News and Google News, that IRS got phished. And what they used was govbenefits.gov's website, and they did a redirect attack. So what happened was it had an URL where you could put any arbitrary URL to it. And so they basically sent it to their phishing site, but in their email it actually was to a .gov site. So you'd go to the .gov site and then take them to the news site. Now, there are better attacks, like Gmail has one and Yahoo both have one, where if you're not logged in, what you can do is set up a redirect, a bypass their filters, and basically you can redirect people. So once you log in, and then it takes you to a phishing site. So you could actually set it up where it just says, you know, you log in the first time, and then it shows an error page saying, can you log in again? You didn't enter your password right. You know, and then that second time the attacker would steal your Gmail account and things like that, and then just pass you right back to Gmail again. So, and then you would be logged in looking at your mail. So, and then you would never know you left the site because you kind of didn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of interesting. So, like, and that's what I call vendors lending a hand or institutions lending a hand to phishers. In my book, I highlight how you can do an Amazon site without ever having a spoof site altogether, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different problems, you know, with a lot of different vendors. And about 30 different banks I've counted have the similar problems. So, you know, you just got to be very careful. And the vendors need to take responsibility. There's things that they can do to detect phishing and prevent phishing. And that definitely not lend a hand to fishers, you know. So I think my rant's over. I think I'm happy.
Why don't you explain how cross-site scripting works? Because I saw a presentation on this tour con. It was very interesting, but I think a lot of people...
Oh, you saw Brian's little thing, yeah. Cross-site scripting is basically the concept. I don't know if you've explained SQL injection or if your listeners know how SQL injection works.
Well, yeah, let's go over basically what SQL
parameter
injection is.
Yeah, it's all parameter manipulation. And it's a combination where, you know, because of lack of input validation, you can put in certain things like quote, backtick, left, right, you know, greater and lesser signs and things like that. And so what will happen is if you take like apple.com, for example, and you go to their search engine, go ahead and type in the strikeout, which is in HTML would be less than S, greater than, and then type in test. You turn that in, you'll see that the word test reflected, but it's striked out. So what's happening is it's actually injecting your code as the query as well. And instead of actually interpreting it and converting it to like a filtered query and saying, hey, you can't do that, or it converts it to the HTML version of the HTML character code set, it actually interprets it in your browser, interprets that code and executes it. So cross-site scripting can be very dangerous because basically what will happen is the target site can be an enemy to you because a hacker can or a phisher can come along and use the target site and gain misplaced trust by attacking your browser, and you still think you're at the right site and it's doing the right things. Because the problem with the web itself is it's blind faith. When you go to your website, you expect it to work right. If you go to your bank, you expect them not to be compromised and that they're secure and that there's nothing wrong with their site. But you really don't know. It's like driving out every day. Every time you go out on the highway, you don't know what to expect. You know, so it's the same thing. So in that sense, cross-site scripting and cross-user attacks, I my chapter 4 and 5 get really detailed, and like there's so many different layers of HTTP type of attacks, but cross-user attacks is how I group them up. What happens is basically you're using the target server to attack the browser, so the end user basically gets hurt, and at the same time it compromises the integrity of both the target site and the browser. Does that make sense? Hopefully that was a decent description.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. So, so there's a lot of different, you know, issues. And, I mean, there's arbitrary redirect attacks. I mean, there's so many different things you can do to people. But it's client-side attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're basically, you know, phishers are going to employ these techniques. They already do. With their malware and distribution, they basically do IE exploit code. So that basically it, you know, launches something on their computer. So... Don't be too quiet, Strom. I get it.
Well, I mean, no, it's very interesting. I mean, you know so much more about this than I do that it's, you know.
It's totally
fascinating.
I think you do some pretty cool stuff. You just don't talk about all of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least not within the context of this show. There's a lot of stuff that I'd love to talk about, but it doesn't have to do anything with fishing.
You want
to
keep your job. No, just kidding.
Yeah, my job is...
Like, I like the ROI that I live in. Risk of incarceration is a good thing. But yeah, so basically that's me in a spiel. I research phishing. I track over 53 phishing groups, and I have fun doing it. And I do a lot of forensics. And you know, if you're an ISP out there listening, you know, feel free to send me an email or send Strom one to say, hey, how can I get a hold of that guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, just talk to me. If you're a bank out there, definitely you know we need to talk too, because there's a lot of steps that you can do to help your customers.
Yeah.
And keep your image since you're worried about it. You know, but that's, I'm just going to tell it how it is. Anti-phishing toolbars don't work, so don't bother buying them. People who, you know what phishing is aren't the problem, and it's not going to lower any numbers because you already know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
All they do is basically make more money for the vendors so that they can feed it to IDS systems that also charge the IDS vendors, so they're basically just using you for intelligence and information to send to them so that they can make even more money than what you've already paid. So, you know, there's a lot of... secure by marketing companies out there. So just be very careful, any banks that buy anything. You know, we do product evaluation, so if we, you know, you come to us and say, well, what do you think of these products in the anti-phishing space, we're going to be real blunt with you about it. And we're not going to, you know, we're not trying to sell you our product or say our product's better. We believe there are good products in the market. But we just want people to be very careful because those guys are fishing for money in the same way fishers are fishing for your information. So just be careful out there.
Yeah, if you want
everywhere, literally.
Yeah, if you want to go to Lance's site, it's www.securescience.net.
Yeah, com works now too.
Yeah, and .com.
But it's pretty bland, and we're getting a new site set up and stuff. But you know, my book information's on the front page if you're interested in getting a copy.
Yeah, Fishing Exposed by Lance James. It's just came out. Awesome book. The list price is $49.95, but Amazon has it for how much? Like $32.
And Book 2, once they get back in stock, had it for $28, but they're not in stock. They sold out pretty quickly. But you can go also on eBay. I'm sure there's some different vendors out there that are selling it. So it's, you know, it's a neat book. I mean, from my perspective, I'm glad that I got the information out there. Books like that, more books need to be written like this in the sense of, you know, it has its market. I didn't sit there and go, hey, this is a phishing, you know, site. This is what phishing is, because anybody who's buying this book already knows what that is because they're dealing with it already. And the people that get victimized aren't buying the book anyways because they don't know they were victimized. So, you know,
This book jumps right into the meat of the matter.
Yeah, law enforcement, programmers, security professionals, you guys are the ones who want to buy this book. You know, it's not not really, you know, for the faint at heart on technology. It's pretty heavy duty. So, and it'll give you a lot of techniques to basically keep track of fishers, and, you know, I kind of spill my beans in there. At the same time, Microsoft made a comment. They go, you do a great job of holding onto your trade secrets while still remaining detailed. I'm like, well, $50, I can, you know, I'm not going to sell myself to Microsoft for $50.
You know? Yeah.
So, you know, but, yeah, so it's a very detailed book, and I really hope that some people who are into this or want to do more research into it, check it out, and it's you know, and feel free to contact me anytime if you have any questions about the book. I think Singris, the publishing company, also has an about a contact the author page, so you can do like a solutions worksheet and, you know, contact me through them as well. So
your email address is, do you want to give that out on the air?
Well, I'll give out info@securescience.net. It'll get to me.
info@securescience.net, or if you just email us at BenRevRadio and it's for Lance, we will gladly forward it on.
I do have a top-level domain email address that I'll hand out.
Oh?
FL@WS. Flaws.
SL@WS?
Yeah, FL@WS. That's Frank Lance.
Oh, Flaws. That's hilarious.
Yeah, @WS. So it'll get to me as well. So.
It's awesome.
Yeah. If your client supports it, it's technically, you know, not working in a lot of clients, which is technically a violation of RFCs, but whatever. Anyways,
cool.
But yeah, so yeah, feel free to email me if you have any questions, or, you know, or email Strom, or, you know, just go grab the book and email Singris or whatever. I think there's a sample chapter on Singris's site, the chapter one, so, you know, it doesn't hurt to go check it out before buying the book. I always like the try before you buy as well.
And if you're really into the whole try before you buy thing, there's always the age-old option of going to going to Barnes & Noble and just taking the book and sitting in
the
aisle and reading the whole thing.
Yeah, and then supporting the author and buying it anyway.
Yeah, buy it anyway.
Either way, I hope people enjoy the book, and I thank you, Strom, for having me on the show regarding the book.
Hey, I thank you very much for coming on the show. This makes it really interesting, and it's been a very interesting technical show.
Yeah,
we need more of that.
Yeah, I mean, if people need me to slow down, they can call in and say, hey, man, slow down.
Yeah.
But I figure the people listening to the show are pretty aware of you know, the problem at the minimum, and pretty technically capable. And
And if people actually have phishing questions that they send, for those of you listening, if you want to email us and ask your phishing questions, we will forward them on to Lance and
get them answered. Yeah,
yeah, and answer them on the air next week.
Yeah, no problem.
So cool. Well, we're going to start wrapping things up. Let's see, announcements. I don't have any announcements. Let me think. Yeah, no announcements this week.
I have an announcement.
Announce away.
I got a rabbit, and he loves me.
rabbit.
Huh?
A rabbit.
Yeah, no, it's a little baby rabbit. She loves me, or he. I can't tell you. You can't really tell. But
is it the deadly killer rabbit of I forget the name.
Actually, it was funny because yesterday I was like annoying it. Like somehow I think I was just playing around, and I don't know if it was playing or not. But I got to the point where usually it's nice and soft and gentle and, like, sniffs you out and stuff. The minute I put my finger next to it, it would do this thing where it clawed at me. I thought that was hilarious. I was like, whoa, that's cool. Like, you're defending yourself. But I think I was just, like, playing around, and it was trying to play around. You know, we may have had a misunderstanding. But, you know, there's my announcement for the week. There.
Well, behind
now
the rabbit.
Officially one announcement.
It is the rabbit.
Sorry. I had to do something like that. Crazy.
Do you have any shouts?
Shout-outs. Everybody who went to my party, You guys rule. Tom, you rule. Thanks for shout out to you for bringing me on the show in the first place. Lucky 225, you rule, and we're going to get you somewhere. And then Josh Brashaj, just because I like to shout out to him because I know he loves it. Let's see who else. My wife, if I can, just because she's cool. And hot too, as you notice. Let's see what else. Everybody just in 2600 all around the world, everybody involved in Bin Rev, everybody involved in the hacker scene, just, you know, keep it real and keep doing the thing because you're keeping the technology in check, and that's important. There you go.
Cool. I'm going to give shout-outs also to Josh for holding me up this weekend so I can go to your party. And shout to Lucky because Lucky's cool, and I had to – I don't know if he's going to kill me for announcing this on the show, but he got extraordinarily drunk at your party.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. Hey, can I imitate him? Can I imitate? I gotta make fun of him. Sorry.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, he's hitting on this chick, and she's like the catering director or whatever. She's cute, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's all, "Hey, do you want to be Seattle? Do you?" And she's like, "Huh?" So whatever "do you want to be Seattle" means, Lucky, props to you. They're still trying to keep it going. That was hilarious, though.
Yeah, actually, we were walking back from your party to the car, and. Oh, he's messaging me now saying, ha, ha, ha.
He's hating us now.
Yeah, we were walking back.
He's fearing, he says.
Yeah. Yeah, he was walking back. We might have one last call in quickly. He's walking back from the car, or to the car, and he's like, we're walking through the parking garage. So he's parked at the mall next to where you had your party, and he's like saying to all these girls in the car's open windows, "I'm way out of your league."
Oh, I know.
He's like staggering around. Nearly knocked the fish out of Josh's hands, you know. And actually, at one point, I had threatened him. And I said, you know, Lucky, if you, if you don't shut up with this, I'm going to hit you on the head with the book. And he didn't. So I took your book and I whacked him on the head pretty hard.
Doesn't it have a great whopping sound, though?
It did. It made like this awesome whacking sound that like reverberated throughout the parking garage. It was loud as hell.
It's such a great sound. My wife hit me with it. She goes, "Wow, you wrote a book that makes a whopping sound."
I should hit myself on the head with it just to hear what it sounds like. So just for demonstration, that's an awesome sound. And now I have a headache.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to do over probably a radio, but you know, it's such a cool sound, and I'm like, it's surreal to me that I actually wrote this thing because you do everything in chapters, so you don't think about the time it takes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But once it's in like book form, you're just tripping on how much you actually wrote. You're like, holy crap! You know,
yeah, how much? How long did it take you to write? Out of curiosity.
Well, the contract was for 3 months,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it took like 5 to 6 because of the fact that I have a real life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, so I told them, I said, you know what, and they were real cool about it. They didn't really care. They just do that because they want to be first to market, and they still are. I mean, there's no other book like this on the market. So
mm-hmm.
There's one other fishing book, and I'm not going to comment, but I've heard from other people that it's, you know, it's not fearing, as Lucky would say. So, but, you had another call.
Well, we have someone who says he's going to call in, but he hasn't even passed through the screener yet, so...
Yeah, and said, I don't remember getting hit on the head when I was drunk or anything about Seattle.
Yeah, and he messaged me, "I fear Seattle."
I think he feared the chick he was talking to, and he lost his words.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to announce that TWAT Radio is back up, if I would please announce it. So, yeah, TWAT Radio is back for all of you people who were wondering about that and randomly... Yeah. So anyway...
Yeah. I have an announcement.
Yeah, announce away.
Yeah, Google Works. No, just kidding. No, my real announcement is I actually found something that's kind of scary. In IE and Netscape, you can actually... there's like a default clipboard reader. So what happens is in IE, you can actually pull people's clipboard information. So if you ever clipboard your credit card and stuff, you might want to clear it before you get online for those IE users. Hopefully there's not many listening to this show.
Yeah, well, I'm an avid Firefox user here.
Yeah, I figured most of the people listening to the show might be. But just letting you know, if you, you know, were curious, if you do use Netscape, it works in Netscape as well, there's a way to turn it off. But I'm too lazy to announce that part. Next week on Bin Rev. All
right. Next week on... Anyway, our site of the week is securescience.net.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, go there, learn, enjoy.
Yeah, I wish I had more.
And buy the book.
Yeah.
We're not here.
If you're involved in tracking fishing, send me an email. Like, if you've ever gotten any stuff where you actually had some info on, like, fishing and stuff, and I'll put you on my super secret list.
Sweet. Yeah, we're not here to pimp anything majorly commercial, but Lance
is all free. All the stuff I've talked about is free.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no, but I mean, as far as the book, Lance is a cool guy and he deserves your royalty payment. So buy the book.
Yeah, it's really, you know, when you write a tech book, it ain't about the royalties. It's just about the getting the information out there. So get the book just because you guys want to learn stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Get the book to learn. Get the book because learning is awesome.
Yeah, and then the publishers can pay me.
Yeah, as
that's
always,
their job. Don't worry about that.
You can email at radio@binrev.com. And our closing music tonight is something from epitonic.com. It's called Mr. Kennedy by the Soft Boys. And it seems like a pretty cool song. Anything else you want to announce before we go?
I'm pregnant. Just kidding. No, I don't know. No, everybody, thanks again for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Same hack time, same hack channel.
Coming into Harrisburg, never seen a body look so tense. Tell me, Mr. Kennedy, have you ever seen the clouds so dense? Coming into Cleveland, riding in the van with seven girls. Tell me, Mr. Kennedy, have you ever seen the clouds so low? Maybe it'll rain tonight. Maybe it'll rain tonight. Coming into paradise, thinking that I must have been here once. Me and Mr. Kennedy haven't seen a blade of grass. Maybe it'll rain tonight. Maybe it'll rain. Maybe it'll rain tonight. Here she comes. Here she comes again. Here she comes as she comes as she comes as she comes as she comes. Coming into Pittsburgh, dreaming of a thousand open shops. Me and Mr. Kennedy, stretching out to catch the first few drops.